Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Grant and Danny, 106. Seven, the Fan, an abbreviated show today. Second hour of two, taking you up till noon. College hoops at that time. We're brought to you by Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. We were just talking about Washington and Dallas. Let's get into the matchup with Pete Haley of NBC Sports Washington, who joins us now to break it down. Pete, I posted a poll yesterday on my Twitter account asking people about two realistic outcomes here. Would you rather Washington win the East with six wins or win four games and pick in the top five? And I don't know that I've ever had a poll go 50-50, but this one did with 2,700 votes. A split fan base on what they want to see happen here moving forward.
Yeah, and I don't really blame the split fan base. And back when I was a fan, I probably would have voted on the 4-12 and build for the future. And anyone who's doing that is probably on the right side of it, if I had to be honest. Like, I understand this playoff berth would mean a lot for a lot of these players, and maybe it would set the tone for the culture going forward. But in the end, I do think it is best to have the best possible pick. However, as this weird season has gone along, I have really warmed up to this upside-down NFC East, and I'm so thrilled at the thought of watching 2-3-7 teams fight for first place tomorrow. And I honestly think it's more fun than if they were both 7-3. Just for this one year, let's just do everything reverse. Let's just make it as ugly as possible. And whoever can get the six wins first will win this thing. So I guess normally I'd vote for the 4-12 option, get the best pick. But with where I'm at right now, my current vibes, I'm all about 6-10 and fighting to host a playoff game at FedEx Field just because it would be so damn bizarre.
Pete, I'm pudgy and I'm out of shape and I get winded easily and I know why I'm fat. I eat foods that are bad for me. I don't exercise enough. I feel like I can diagnose that, but doing something about it's different. Their first halves are terrible. They're aware of it, but doing something about it seems to be very different for them. Why have they been so bad in the first half? And they got lucky, frankly, against Cincinnati, that Cincinnati didn't take advantage of. That could have been up by a whole bunch more points. It's a different game if they do. Why has that been the case that they've come out so poorly?
It's not a hit on Grant and Danny unless Danny pokes fun at his weight or his athleticism. So I'm glad we got that out of the way early. As for the first half issues, you're right. Only the Jets have a worse point differential in the first half than Washington. And anytime you're behind the Jets, you do not want to be there much longer. And it is dumbfounding. But if you want to try and be on the positive side, at least recently it's been somewhat better. Like, at least when it comes to the opening drives, right? When they hosted the Giants, they had that big first play to Antonio Gibson, but he fumbled. Then when they went to Detroit, they were in field goal position, but Dustin Hopkins missed. And then last week, they were kind of doing some decent things. They scored a touchdown on the second drive, which was big-time progress, even though they had a kind of a crappy first one. But it is mind-numbing that these coaches who get paid so much and spend so much time in the facility can't figure out or just haven't even gotten lucky in one or two games to go up early. And I don't want to sound like the biggest obvious person in the world. This is not news-breaking stuff here. But Washington really operates better when they're at least close. They don't even need to be in the lead. They just need to stay close because that allows them to keep that playbook open, keep the running game viable. You don't have to have Alex Smith throw it 50 times. You can let your defensive line rush the pass so they're not just facing run after run. So at least you can diagnose it. They're definitely diagnosing it too. But what are the issues? Why haven't they fixed it? That's beyond me. It is shocking. And if they can't do it on Thanksgiving, just what are we doing here? Why can't these genius coaches make the team better in the beginning parts of the game. It's so frustrating to watch.
Pete, the Cowboys are not the team that Washington faced when they blew them out at FedEx a few weeks ago. Andy Dalton presumably will play for the entire game. And more importantly, their defense is playing better. They're running the ball a little bit better. They've sorted out their offensive line, which was in shambles that day. How do you feel about Dallas as an opponent comparative to the first time they saw this group?
Definitely a little tougher, and going on the road is going to make it more difficult. They're going to have upwards of 30,000 fans, and while all of Washington's players, or at least for the most part, besides the rookie class, are used to playing in front of 70,000, it will be a bit of a switch for them to have a decent amount of crowd noise in 2020. But to your point about the defense, they're allowing 36 a game in their first six, and in the last four, they've cut that down to 25. So overall, they're still worse in the NFL in terms of allowing points per game, but that's a really big difference. So I guess credit to Mike Nolan for doing something right. He survived somehow in that early going and still has his job. So I do think it's going to be a lot tougher matchup, and I do think the biggest difference, while the defense is better, it's that O-line, because that is where Washington's wins have come. It's when their opponents' O-lines are shuffled or when there's a backup quarterback in the game. Dallas, they're going to have their at least preferred starter over a Ben DiNucci or whoever else is there, and they're going to have a better offensive line. So Washington, they're going to have to find other ways to win because they're not just going to be able to beat them up. This is not going to be the easy 22-point victory it was in late October, for sure.
Pete, do you watch The Crown?
No, but my girlfriend just started watching it, and, you know, I'm not opposed to giving it a shot. I'm interested to see how this relates to what we're talking about, though.
It's fantastic, and I don't know anything about these people. I've never cared, but the show is so good that I'm kind of, like, now invested. Here's the point. Charles, who is just so annoying, and his character stinks on the show, he's married to this person, but there's this temptation that's always kind of circling around him named Camilla, and he can't quit Camilla. I think Alex Smith is a coach's Camilla, because the temptation to have this overpriced check-down machine that everybody loves, and everybody's very excited about sideways passes and nothing dynamic on the offense, but he doesn't turn it over and he's great in the locker room. I'm terrified that he's your quarterback to start the next season and they think they're going to be able to go compete with him. I need an upper echelon star. I need someone drafted. I need to have my quarterback position solved for the next 10 years. I feel like the temptation's growing each and every day that Alex Smith is mildly successful in this system. Your thoughts?
That was really well done, and I am with you. And look, I'm not the biggest Alex Smith supporter. I would love for them to get a young hotshot quarterback who throws the ball 20 yards downfield and is looking that way all the time, and more importantly, is 23 instead of 36. But the one thing I'll say about Alex Smith, and this is something I would have never really cared about had I not gotten into journalism and have been around this team as much as I am, is there is something about his experience and his knowledge and just his aura that players buy into. And I know that is probably nauseating and some people will just be like, that's BS. But I remember we had Nick Sundberg on the podcast a couple of years ago, and this was after Alex's injury. And he said, when Alex was in the huddle, when he was in that locker room, there's just this belief that he would put us in a winning spot, that he had seen everything twice and he would never be fooled or never be taken aback by any situation. And I think that's why he is a coach's Camilla. And I think that's why Ron Rivera likes him so much, because no matter what happens, he's not going to be ruffled. He's going to be able to put the offense where it needs to be. He's going to make the right pre-snap reads. And again, you want to have a first rounder who's flashy and who's on SportsCenter for the crazy crossbody throw he made to the sideline that Next Gen stats said was a 12% likelihood to be completed. But there is something, at least for this current team right now, where Alex can just distribute the ball to these young guys. He can show them the way. He can tell them where to go and what to look for, and he can keep the defense in it. So look, I would love for Washington to find an answer next year, and I really don't think they should go with Alex. But for the rest of the year, I'm on board with Alex, just because there's this sort of mystique and this confidence that comes with him being in the lineup.
And I'm not buying the Ron Rivera loves Alex Smith so much thing. He wouldn't be playing if Kyle Allen didn't hurt his leg. I mean, he was the third stringer at the beginning of the year. Haskins had to stink, and then Allen had to get hurt, and now he's playing. I'll save my angst until after they pass on, you know, Zach Wilson and a bunch of quarterbacks in the draft and take an inside linebacker. Pete, thank you, buddy. Much appreciated.
All right, thank you, guys. Have a good Thanksgiving.
You too, buddy. Well, man. Eat something delicious. Eat a lot of delicious things, actually. Pete Haley, find his work, NBCSportsWashington.com. Steven Sims was on the show yesterday. He's the last guy that Alex Smith threw a touchdown pass to. Steven Sims is all in on winning the division, even if it means winning the division at 5 or 6 games, because he says that will matter to the football team. We'll let you hear what he says. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. College basketball returns today, and it returns right here on The Fan at noon, 40 minutes from now. Virginia Tech's got a game, and that means we are done for the day. What are you going to do with your extra time this afternoon, Danny?
We are ultimately going to go through with our Thanksgiving Day plans. We're headed up to my mother-in-law's for a tiny family gathering. We won't be violating any of the protocols or rules that have been set in place, but that's where we're headed up to do. So I will be stopping by Rockland's Barbecue to pick up a couple side dishes, my contribution to the Thanksgiving table, some macaroni and cheese, some slaw, and we'll be headed up there for the kids to play with their grandma.
We'll watch some college hoops. One more day, one more sleep until the greatest day on the calendar.
The best.
It's going to be good. A little mini vacation for us. Day off tomorrow to watch football all day long. I will let everyone know really quickly, though, that you still can get in on the Rocket Mortgage 2020 Pro Football Pick'em. Your boy has 105 wins. The leader of the Intercom hosts has 108, I think, right now. I am tied for second place, I think, at this point. So this is not against the spread. This is not lineups, nothing like that. You're just picking winners for every single game. And we compete against listeners all over the country. You can sign up right now and win $1,000 in this week's games. We give out $1,000 every single week. It's the Rocket Mortgage 2020 Pro Football Pick'em. Rules for the national contest available at radio.com/picks right now. So go check that out. We had Steven Sims on the show yesterday. Steven Sims, who caught a touchdown to help beat the Bengals. We asked him, dude, you realize if you guys win the division at like 6-10, everyone's going to be making fun of you. It's not going to be seen as some big accomplishment. People are just going to be joning. And this is what he had to say about that. I love this answer. This is what he said.
That won't matter, honestly, because I remember when I was a young boy growing up a Saints fan, and the Saints had to travel to Seattle and see a 7-9 team, and the Saints were 11-5, and the Saints got sent home. So that's kind of what I remember about a lot about, you know, my youth, my growing up about football. It's, you know, in the playoffs, it's 0-0. It don't matter who, you know, it's who shows up today. That's NFL football regardless, whether, you know, it's playoffs week 1, week 2, week 8. It's about who shows up that day and who plays well as a unit that day, and that's the team that's going to win. Everybody's capable. Everybody has star players from college and this and that on their team. So it's the small things that separate and is the difference in them.
Danny, what if Washington somehow wins the NFC East? It really doesn't matter if it's Washington or somebody else, to be honest with you. Let's say the Eagles win the division, and they end up playing the top wild card. Like right now, that would be Seattle. And then they knocked that team off. I mean, do you know how mad NFL fans would be? Do you know what the reaction would be to what Steven Sims is talking about? And we've seen this before, yeah, where undeserved 7-9 division champions beat much better teams because they get the home game. Now, home field advantage doesn't matter this time necessarily that much. We've seen that in the regular season play and the wins and losses for the road teams. But right now it'd be Philly and Seattle in Philadelphia. That's right. A game we're going to see this week on Monday Night Football, in fact. And it's a 5-point spread. It's not like it's a 14-point spread. That's a one or two quirky plays happen, and the Eagles might beat the Seahawks playing in Philly.
Yeah, batted pass interception for a touchdown. You know, weird fumble, fluky punt return. I mean, there's a million things that can happen. DeSean Jackson's healthy for the first time in 3 years. I mean, you know how it goes.
I love the Steven Sims take, though, and this is how this is, you know, fans, people like me and you on the outside, media members, whatever you want to quantify us as at this point, we don't think like players, and we don't think like coaches. And we shouldn't. It's very different roles. This is how they should feel, no doubt about it. I liked hearing what he had to say about that.
Same here. Listen, this is a very simple thing, and this is what people who get angry at me when they think they just oversimplify it, and it's like, oh, all you want to do is lose, you want them to tank. How do you talk to the guys in the locker room? Well, very easily. Everyone's got a job to do. Here is the job of the player. Try to win as many games as possible. Play as well as possible. If you don't, by the way, you'll be out of a job. It's very simple. You do the best you can. The next level up is the coach and the evaluators. You try to get the players to be the best that they can. Then the level above that is We have to figure out if that player is the best thing for us, or replace him with somebody else, or draft, or free agent, or cut, or trade. All of those things. The adults have a different responsibility than the kids. And I'm not, these players are grown men, but you see my point. The adults in the room have to have the big picture in mind. The player should never worry about the big picture. The player's got enough to worry about. What route am I running? What is the quarterback seeing? Is it zone? Is it man? Where do I break off my route? And what's my marker? Do I stay on this hash mark? What play is going on? They shouldn't worry about, well, geez, if I don't catch this pass, we'll get a better draft pick. That should never enter their minds. You do the best you can. And then everyone else has a different job to do. My job, sitting here with on my fat behind, is to figure out, is Steven Sims the best thing for this team? Or do they need a new slot receiver? That's just kind of how these things go. Everyone's got their role to play. So, of course, I want to hear this from my players. Of course, I want Steven Strasburg not to be shut down. But I have adults in the room that make those big picture decisions.
And it goes without saying that this is how players should feel, which is why, you know, the part of it I'm kind of trying to drill down on and that I bring up, Danny, is, you know, how realistic, how meaningful or possibly accurate is what he's saying, which is this 0-0 idea. It now doesn't matter how we played in the regular season. I mean, the problem with that line of thinking is that you still are that team that went 6-10, 5-11. You're not adding talent all of a sudden. You're not pulling people off injured reserve or signing a player off the scrap heap to now contribute an inside linebacker. You're not all of a sudden going to be able to mask deficiencies. The same problems you had are the same problems that show up at the field at FedEx to play Seattle or whoever it's going to be, the Rams or something potentially, you know, in week one of the postseason. So that's why I don't really buy it. But we have seen where teams that you don't think should make the playoffs, where you're not sure that they're deserving, get there, and they actually win. The problem is winning a playoff game, well, it seems ridiculous to say as a fan of a team that never wins playoff games, really isn't that big of a deal if you're not going on a run. And while I wouldn't rule out the possibility, because Seattle's defense is completely fraudulent and they've won a lot of close games, if you played the Seahawks as an example, or Arizona, let's say, or something like that, I wouldn't give you no chance to win that game. It's not like it's a 1 versus a 16 in a college basketball tournament. You probably have like a 30% chance, 25% chance to win that game in the NFL where everybody's a professional, where weird things happen and the ball bounces in crazy ways. The problem is to warrant and justify that, you got to go on a run. And stringing wins together against superior teams does not happen. And that's where I'm at on it, Danny. Steven Sims's point is true. I think he makes a point that is actually relevant. And yeah, you could knock off a team. We've seen it happen. Can you win a Super Bowl? Can you go on a run to a conference championship game? Because that's where it starts to matter. And the answer to that, I think, definitively is no.
Right. It fools people into a false confidence. Again, it's very Ernie Grunfeld, right? Where you go, we made marginal improvements. We're better than we were. We won the playoffs. And you get to keep your job forever, and you sacrifice the chance to be great just to incrementally get a little bit better. I care about being great. And winning a playoff game in the wild card round, just because you have a quirky rule where you get to be at home, and now this is not a normal year, obviously, where home field matters, but you see my point. So what that Seattle Seahawks team beat New Orleans? And the idea that propelled them, it's a false choice or a false narrative. The idea that they won that game, so therefore they were going to be great at some point. They were going to be great because they made great personnel decisions. They were going to be great because they built through the draft and had a great system and a great scheme, and you found fourth, fifth, and sixth rounders like Richard Sherman to play at Pro Bowl levels. Very little because, the momentum carried over. I don't believe in that. Otherwise, the momentum would have carried over one of these times that Washington had these winning streaks to end the season. Instead, they usually go 3-13 after they win 5 or 6 or 7 games to end the year. So I've never bought this sort of carryover thing. It's about sustained excellence, and winning a playoff game in the wild card round doesn't provide that to me.
Let's open up the AAA Always On Call listener lines. You guys can hop in if you'd like next. 800-636-1067. We can fit in a few calls here. What do you make of this idea Steven Sims is talking about? You just get in and crazy things happen. You know, weird things can happen. If they made the playoffs at 6-10, would you give them any chance to win a playoff game or two? Is that something because it's the NFL where you'd say, yeah, that's possible. Why not? Just get there. All you got to do is get into the dance. I feel that way at 9-7 when you're a winning team. I wouldn't feel that way at 6-10. What about you guys? You're listening to The Fan. Grant and Danny, 106.7, the Fan, an abbreviated show today. We are with you for another 25 minutes leading you up to college basketball. You can call us at 800-636-1067, the AAA always on call listener lines. We had Steven Sims on the show yesterday, and he talked about just wanting to get into the playoffs and the fact that when you get there, you're 0-0 like everybody else, and anything can happen. I'm going to play this cut for you again, and then we'll let you react to it on the phones. This was Sims on G&D yesterday.
That won't matter, honestly, because I remember when I was a young boy growing up a Saints fan, and the Saints had to travel to Seattle and see a 7-9 team, and the Saints were 11-5, and the Saints got sent home. So that's kind of what I remember about a lot about, you know, my youth, my growing up about football. It's, you know, in the playoffs, it's 0-0. It don't matter who, you know, it's who shows up today. That's NFL football regardless, whether, you know, it's playoffs week one, week two, week eight. It's about who shows up that day and who plays well as a unit that day, and that's the team that's going to win. Everybody's capable. Everybody has star players from college and this and that on their team. So it's the small things that separate and is the difference in them.
Which makes some sense. The problem with that thinking is, you know, let's say you're playing, I'm just picking Seattle because as of right now, that would be the team right. The NFC East champion plays. They don't have that game where they show up flat against Miami. Like, it's a playoff game for them, too. They've been waiting all year to play in that game. You're probably getting the most motivated, the most locked-in version of that team. And I can see if you're 9-7 or even 8-8 or maybe 7-9, although that's extreme. But if you're, you know, an average middle-of-the-pack team, couple plays go different, maybe you won 10 games, something like that, that you can get hot and you can have a great game. When you're 6-10, the difference between you and a 10-win playoff-type team is pretty substantial. Let's go to AJ in Centerville on line one. AJ, what do you make of what Steven Sims said on the show yesterday?
Hey, I would just say that, you know, winning more and winning at the time, I think, is always more important than building and trying to get the drafts. I mean, especially if you look at overtime, the amount of draft picks the Redskins have gotten, you would think, the whole SEC on defense, that they should be good. So to continue to, like, be looking for people and all that stuff, I mean, yeah, you need to do that, but you can do that through free agency. You can do that with better scouts that obviously can find other people besides a draft. That's what really will win. At the end of the day, a lot of the first round, second round, third round picks, they don't even make it past week 10, week 11 in most seasons. So you're always dealing with the later picks and drafts to really build a football team anyway. So I just think that there's that saying too, like, if not now, when? You know, like, when? I mean, you just keep building and building. I think they've built enough. Yeah, they need certain pieces still, definitely, but their defense is, I mean, Nick Foles and the Eagles won a Super Bowl. So I think that, like, if a defense can carry it, yeah, I don't think they're going to beat Russ Wilson and, like, they're not going to. But if you go 6-10 and you make the playoffs and then you win one game and your defense is rolling, I'm not a Redskins fan, but, I mean, that's like a perfect recipe, especially if you have a defense that can, you know, can do the things that I think that they kind of can. I mean, their defensive line is serious. So,
I appreciate you, man. Thank you. Here's the problem. We're not really talking. I mean, we talked about this yesterday, for the record. We're not right now talking about the draft pick versus the playoffs, right, which is kind of what you're getting to. My point is just this team, as it's constructed, to get into the playoffs would be 6-10, which means in the final six games, you went probably 3-3. It's not like you got on a heater. You know, maybe you lose this week and then you go 3-2 down the stretch. That's still not doing what the 15 team did where they won four in a row, or the 12 team did where they won 7 in a row. It's not like you're going in on a roll probably. If you win the division at 7 or 8 wins and you went 5-1 down the stretch, that's very different, I would say. Then maybe your defense is playing great and you've got momentum, and that is a little bit tougher matchup for a Seattle or somebody else.
If they rip off 5 in a row, let's go have some fun. But that's we're kind of saying, hey, given their current pace, winning back-to-back games would be the achievement so far for this group. They haven't really sniffed that. So, but just looking at them as they're kind of constructed here, GP, you know, people just accuse me of, like, not wanting them to go to the playoffs, not wanting to win. There is some value in that. And there's not value in for Alex Smith doing it, but there's value in Terry McLaurin getting to. There's value in Jonathan Allen and Daron Payne and Chase Young and Tim Settle and some of the young pieces that are going to be here. Those experiences are worthwhile. I just happen to think they're spinning their wheels because they don't have the quarterback of the future. But it doesn't mean there's zero value in it. It's not absolute.
if next year you make a playoff game authentically, let's say as a wild card at 9-7, mm-hmm. or maybe you win a slightly better NFC East at 9-7 with a tiebreaker or something like that, and your quarterback going into that playoff game is Kyle Trask or it's Zach Wilson, who I really like from BYU, or whoever. Mm-hmm. That guy's playing in his first playoff game, but he's probably better off if Terry McLaurin all week is saying, hey, we played Seattle last year. Here, you know, the game speeds up. Here's a couple things that happen. If 57% of your roster is kept and all those guys played in the playoffs last year, you're better off for that, I would say.
Yep.
Let's go to Dan in Fairfax on G&D. What's up, Dan? How are you?
Hey, guys. First of all, I want to say I hope you have the best Thanksgiving ever.
Thank you. Same to you.
I don't agree that y'all – I don't understand how you cannot like turkey. I love turkey. But anyway.
Really? Do you like the dark meat or the white meat, Dan?
White meat.
Not me, bro. Sorry.
With no hesitation, I love turkey. Anyway,
eat it without gravy?
I like it with gravy and a little bit of salt maybe and cranberry sauce.
Yeah, a bunch of sauce on top of it. It's a sauce delivery vehicle. We both know that, Dan. But please make your point.
But I totally agree with Steven Sims. Well, once you make it into the playoffs, anything can happen. Like Jim Carrey says, so you're saying there's a chance. But I also think that in the draft next year, if we do not win any more games this year, we're not going to get any of the top quarterbacks. So I say, you know, try to win as much as you can. You know, I think we can still be 7-9. Maybe I'm positive beater, like Danny calls me. But also Alex Smith and our defense, I think we have a good chance, man. We could go on a run. We should have won two or three more games, I thought. So that's my thought.
They were bad, and they didn't do that. Hey, let me ask you a question real quick, Dan, before you go. Dagger. All right, no problem. He's gone. I was going to ask him – He said we can't get any, or I guess his point was Washington can't get any of the quarterbacks picking if they keep losing. I don't agree with that. You're not going to get Trevor Lawrence if that's your goal. He's going first overall, probably to the Jets. I don't think you'll get Justin Fields. He might be the second best quarterback in this class. But if you're picking fourth or fifth, then everybody else is very likely there. I mean, you're picking between the rest of this class, and this is a class where there might be six first-round quarterbacks in the end, probably five. What do you like? Do you like Trey Lance? Do you like Zach Wilson? Do you like – I mean, there are names here. There are guys. Now, you're going to reach on someone. Like a Kyle Trask shouldn't go number four, but if you love a quarterback, then you take him at number four, and you let people beat you up about it and say that you're dumb, and then you got Justin Herbert at number six, potentially, if you hit on the guy that you like. A G&D on 106.7, The Fan, we're with you until – noon today as we lead into college basketball on a holiday afternoon on The Fan.
Guys, Danny Ruya here from a pals at Ted Britt Ford. I'm a Ted Britt guy. Here's what I mean by that, okay? I'm a multi-time Ted Britt customer. They took great care of me and the lady wife all the way back in 2016. We test drove an Edge, a couple other things. We loved it. Couldn't believe the deal. The buying experience was top-notch. Top-notch, Spalding! So we went back multiple times to Ted Britt Ford. And we're driving around a brand new Edge. I think it's a 2019 Edge. I'm not even sure, to be honest with you. We've had it for over a year. And speaking of having it over a year, you got to get service done on your cars. You guys know how cars and trucks and SUVs work. We need service, right? So I'm going, it's a pandemic. What do I do? What am I doing? Drive out there? Am I bringing my kids? What's the deal? No. Just went online. Very simple. Schedule my service appointment online. Ted Britt came and picked up the vehicle, performed the service, and brought it back fully sanitized. I had to one time open my door and hand the key to somebody. That's how involved I was in it. It's so simple and so great. Let these guys take care of you. They're awesome. And when you go and hit them up at Ted Britt Ford and Fairfax and Chantilly, please tell them Danny sent you.
In Charlottesville, top 5 team in the land in Towson today. Best of luck to Tony Bennett and his boys as they get started. Preseason All-American list has some familiar names, including Baylor guard Jared Butler and Gonzaga's big man. Also, Luca Garza is a guy everyone keeps telling me to watch, the big center from Iowa, who is a senior this year, who's a preseason All-American. So looking forward to
this. I thought he went pro, that guy. I guess he didn't, right? The draft came and went. That dude is a force, man.
Yeah, that guy apparently is like the dude. So I don't know. I'm being told that's a guy to watch this season if you're casually getting into college hoops. I always get into Georgetown and watch them. They play today and get started against Radford. Of course, we've got Virginia Tech on our air at the top of the hour starting at noon. But regardless, Danny, I want to talk college football for a second, if you don't mind, with college basketball taking Please. Center stage at the top of the hour, because we got our rankings for the first time that came out for the college football playoff last night, and people seemed pretty surprised by this. Alabama's number one, 7-0. Notre Dame's number two, 8-0. Seemed like locks and no-brainers, where the interesting kind of door opened and where everyone was worried, okay, what's going to happen? It started at number three. That's where the whole process began. Clemson at 7-1, and then Ohio State at 4-0, having only played four games, was number four. And to that I kind of say, what was the point of having the season so far?
Right. Like,
Alabama, Notre Dame, Clemson, and Ohio State is kind of how you could have rolled it out. Not in that order, obviously, Notre Dame having made some hay. But Cincinnati was number seven, the highest-ranked Group of Five team in the history of these rankings. Georgia's number nine, BYU's 14. That seems crazy low. Yes, they play a weak schedule, but
that's not their fault.
Dominates everyone by seemingly dozens of points every week, and there's 13 teams ranked ahead of them. Like, doesn't part of it just seem to you like, why do we even do this? What is the point of any of this?
Exactly. So Clemson played, and granted, it was an overtime game against Notre Dame. They were very evenly matched. I'd like to think with Trevor Lawrence, they probably win that game, but still, I think all the first two are fair. There are a couple that really bother me, and Georgia at nine, having been woodshedded by a couple teams, just absolutely shellacked ahead of BYU, who you mentioned. Again, I understand BYU's schedule is not good, but it's not their fault that we decided to go conference only. They would have had a more decent schedule, not a great one. They're not playing an SEC schedule by any stretch of the imagination, but they're good. This is what kind of kills me about college football. It's why I've never been less excited about it. Now, this year it's obviously very different because of COVID and everything, but you know, we make fun of women's college basketball, where you could fall asleep and not see any games and go, yeah, it's UConn, it's Tennessee, it's Notre Dame, it's like one of the team. Well, it's the same for college football. It's Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State. And who's your fourth team that year? Who's your upstart? But there they are. What's the point of having a season if we're not going to have any kind of difference from it? I mean, I don't know. It's frustrating to me.
Well, here's
but
what
I don't
have
a better way to do it.
What's BYU going to do now? Okay, because they had this opportunity where they said they wanted to play a team, and I think Washington came forward. It didn't materialize. They wanted to do it on their terms, and they said, let us see where we are in the rankings first. Well, now they know they're 14. So unless they add games, they only have one game left.
And they're trying to.
Yeah, they want to, right? They want to try to add even a couple games potentially. But their only game remaining is in San Diego State on December 12th. Cincinnati has an opening on December 5th. Like, do you just play Cincinnati December 5th now? Because if you win that game, it might catapult you a few spots. You move past certainly them and maybe all the way up the board. Or what do you do? Because if you only play San Diego State and you win your last game that's remaining on your schedule, from 14, you're not going any higher than, like, 10 possibly. I think they got screwed. I really do. You're right about Georgia, too, who I love. But 16.5 points is the average deficit in their two losses. To be in the top nine, five spots higher than BYU seems crazy. I was pumped for Northwestern. I don't know how legit they are, but they're number eight, ranked higher in football than in pretty much anything at this point. Like, the zing I saw via Axios was they're ranked higher in football than they are in the U.S. News and World Report, number 11. But there's some stuff that I liked here, but it just seems like I could have told you. We make the joke all the time about women's college basketball. Beginning of the year, I who's going to rank where. How is college football not that much different in this new
that's
playoff
my point.
Committee? It's frustrating.
It's not fun. I mean, I've grown up. I love basketball so much, and I grew up loving the NBA. But you know, when it was the Warriors in the finals against whoever LeBron was playing for basically five straight years, it's not that much fun for me anymore. You know, it's just this futile exercise where we're going, well, maybe the Wizards can make a trade, or maybe nope. We know how this whole thing is going to go. And I know Toronto beat them, and I know LeBron beat them once, but Golden State being in the finals every year just kind of made the whole thing boring. So it's not as much fun for me.
Here's what I know.
The regular fans love dynasties. It's just not as much fun for me as a fan, just to sort of know it before the season starts.
Based on who BYU played and how they handled their schedule, they had no chance the moment their schedule was released, period. Like, that's what we learned yesterday.
And I'm sure that's good, right?
They don't get to do it. Not even in the top four. Like, you're not even in the conversation. You're not even close to the top 10. But I would play Cincinnati if I was them. And if I'm Cincinnati at number seven, they have an actual chance here to jump into the top four with a win over a BYU. So if they're willing to play you on December 5th, I would definitely do that.
Without question.
That part of this is kind of cool, that, like, we'll play anybody, any place, anywhere, just making up the schedule as you go. It feels kind of like a movie. That's kind of tight. I like that.
It's the, you know, I'm trying to think of the example. I think it was Mike Lonergan years ago at GW, when GW beat UVA, when UVA was the number one team in the country, right? And all Lonergan could do was thank UVA for playing them. And I was like, what are you talking, what, why? And then I kind of went down the list and sort of figured out what it meant. If you are a power program, there's no incentive to go play kind of a mid-major like GW.
Zip.
Because the win doesn't help you in your RPI, and a loss is catastrophic. So he was so effusive in that kind of praise. None of these teams above BYU would want to play them, for the most part, right? I mean, think about the risk. Think about the risk to all these different squads. And even if you win, people will go, yeah, so what, you should have.
I think Dallas beats Washington tomorrow. I'm going to say it's a four-point game, 24-20, and it's competitive. What's your feel?
Dallas 26, Washington 23. I think they win it.
All right.
Close.
By a field goal. Another close game. For Danny, I'm Grant, saying so long. Happy Thanksgiving to all of you. Really, really appreciate you listening to the show as always. Tommy and Brennan, great work behind the scenes. Enjoy your holidays. Keep it right here for College Hoops.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room, to candid interviews with basketball legends, to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.